Did you ever have someone explain something to you in such a way that by the time they got done doing all that explaining, you were completely on board, and then you kind of have this moment, man, if somebody had just explained it to me in this way and broke it down just like this, I would have been on board right from the get-go. Well, today I'm hoping that we have one of those moments together, because I'm going to offer you two compelling reasons why every single sales rep needs to be involved in LinkedIn. My name is Paul Castain, and I'm the author of the Your Sales Playbook blog and your host for the Sales Playbook podcast. I've personally trained over 10,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready, because school is now in session. Okay, so before I lay out these two compelling reasons, I just want to tell you about 2 to 3 misunderstandings that I think a lot of people have with social networking and social selling, and particularly LinkedIn. So, I mean, the first one, I think the minute you guys hear somebody preaching about why you should be involved with LinkedIn, you might tense up and you might become really, really guarded, because what you think is being said to you is a message of abandon the things that are working for you now. So maybe what you think I'm going to say to you is, well, you know what, give up like the tried and true traditional things, like picking up a phone, knocking on doors, sending out email. I'm not saying that at all. I really believe that sales is a mixed martial art. And, you know, we have to be able to embrace many different fighting styles, and many different venues of communication will offer us things that other forms will not. Also, you have to understand, and you've heard me say this numerous times, that everyone has their own preferred form of communication, right? Or their preferred venue for communication. Yes, you will have people who just love the phone. They prefer the phone. Everything with them is a phone call, even to the point, sometimes shoot them an email, there goes your phone. They want to talk about it, right? We all know people like that. You're also going to find that you have other people that you go and you pick up the phone and you get their voicemail. Next thing you know, you're getting an email. What's up? Right? Or a text message. And you have still other people that prefer to do like a lot of their communication at like events, and they're going to all the industry events and, you know, the trade shows and the local chamber meetings and events and business card exchanges. You have other people who are really big on the social networks, that's where you're going to see them. And you have other people who are going to respond very well to something creative or somebody dropping in, believe it or not, because these are spontaneous people who don't want to commit to really anything. And there you are. They have 5 minutes free. Bang. They're going to grant you an audience. You have, you know, all kinds of different things that are out there. And that's why I'm a big advocate of having, to me, I look at it like a lottery ticket, right? A free lottery ticket. The more of those different forms that I can embrace, the higher the probability that I can win and they can win too, because this isn't me versus them. So that's the first thing. And what I want to just really put out there with you, with me especially, whenever I tell you that you should embrace LinkedIn, remember that not only am I in the trenches with you, right? Like, I'm not one of these dudes that like stopped selling like, you know, like 1997 or something like that. Been doing it for 33 years. I came up on the traditional stuff. And I'm here to tell you that you couldn't pay me enough money to abandon the traditional cold calling, knocking on doors. And even, you know, I hate to put it in the traditional sense, but it has been around for over 20-something years now, like at least commercially, email, right? I mean, you know, I know those things work. I mean, many of you are on my email list, and I think it's an awesome form of communication. I mean, I make a lot of money every time I press that send button on email. But I'm also here to tell you that when I talk about LinkedIn, it's to complement whatever you're doing. So I don't want you to feel guarded. I don't want you to feel that at the end of the podcast, I'm saying, give up everything. I'm not going to like turn around and say, okay, you've been a righty your whole life. We got to make you into a southpaw. Not at all. I just want to show you how to use the other hand. Okay. So the other misunderstanding is that you might think, well, I don't have time, man. Castain, like, I am already just like crazy busy, I'm super swamped and all that. I respect that. I want to tell you that many times we complicate things, and LinkedIn is one of them. What I always advise my new clients to do is to start by dipping your toe in the water. Because most people, by the time they get to me, they really don't have a lot of activity that they're doing on LinkedIn. And even so, maybe they're not doing the right activities, right? They're kind of confusing that with what they could be doing to nurture relationships and move them along systematically toward, hopefully, a new client or getting a referral. So what I always recommend is you dip your toe in the water. Start out by 15 to 30 minutes a day. Not to be confused with 50 to 30 minutes. I said 15 as in like 1 freaking 5 to 30 minutes a day. A little idea, a tip for you to consider, and it's something I've shared many times, especially on the podcast. It's called the Pomodoro Technique. The Pomodoro Technique is when you take a timer, probably that one that's right on your smartphone, that'll work, and you set it for a given amount of time. And during that time, you don't do anything else but that activity. So if we're working on LinkedIn stuff, we don't allow inbound calls to come. We don't go checking our email. We don't go and talk to the boss about like the freaking TPS reports or whatever. We just focus on the task at hand. And then at the end of that time, we go back to the other activities. What this forces you to do is to be really, really focused. You're going to find that you're going to get a lot more done in that time because you're not like having all these ADD moments that we have in sales. You're not going to be, oh, look, a squirrel. Oh, look, this. Oh, look, an email. Oh, look, a phone call. You're going to be focused on nothing but the task or tasks at hand. So you're going to find that you get a lot more done. So let's just say that you're going to go with that 30-minute a day type of thing. You're going to take the extreme end of what I'm proposing. 15 to 30 minutes, you're going for 30 minutes. You don't have to do those 30 minutes all at once. You might be the kind of person you want to go 10 minutes at a time, or you might want to go the full 30. You set that timer. At the end of it, you're done. It's really that simple. The other thing that I want to tell you is that, a lot of this can be done off hours. You don't have to do LinkedIn during quote-unquote game time. What you can do is you could do this while you're having your morning coffee. You could do this at lunchtime. You could do this like after dinner or whatever it is, after the kids go to sleep or whatever. But, you know, Jim Rohn had said something a while ago. I'm going to butcher this. But he said something along the lines that if something is important to you, you'll find a way. If it isn't, you'll find an excuse. And a lot of us, we make excuses for everything. I hear people making them about cold calling or just like picking up the phone. Well, man, I'm just so busy with my existing clients. Well, you see, the thing that you have to worry about there is that, you know, you could get like a left hook thrown at you. And I know that's how I lost my first business, by the way. I just had a tremendous amount going on with my existing clients. I had brought in DuPont, was one of my printing clients back then. Many of you have heard of Miracle-Gro. That was one of my clients. I had chains of stores out in the New York area, whatever it is. But I had a few very big clients, including LinkedIn. LinkedIn was my client back then before they were even invented. That's how good your Uncle Paul is. But including DuPont. DuPont picked up and moved out of the New York area, and they only wanted to use local vendors. They didn't want to have somebody in New York. And that little left hook was, I think it was a minimum of $750,000 that I lost on that. I think it was actually closer to $1 million. And then I had a few other, like a Canadian company, do the same. So in no time at all, I mean, you could be quite vulnerable. So, you know, to me, you have to find the time to grow your business by any and all means, so long as it's between ethical and legal. So you really need to find the time for this and stop with the excuses. But the other thing that I want to talk about right now is really those compelling reasons. Right now, I just kind of covered the misunderstandings that we have. I want to go like cannonball into that pool with you right now. The very first reason to me is what we would call a mic drop moment. It would be – I mean, and that's like a really – like a phrase people beat the shit out of. I'm sorry, but I'm going to do it too. I'm not feeling well today, by the way. In case you haven't heard, with my damn cold here, I'm going to do crazy things with you. This is me like no meds. Purposely didn't take any before I got on this. I didn't want to be like – all kinds of like getting depressed and like, you guys, don't leave me. You're all my best friends. Anyway, sorry. There are no gatekeepers, man. This, and I said this is a like a mic drop moment, because when you really think about this fact that there are no gatekeepers on LinkedIn, we're done right there. That should be enough. Like, you know, like hello McFly, like somebody banging on your head saying, like, get this. There are no, let me say it again. No gatekeepers are on LinkedIn. And I want to tell you, I mean, forgive me for beating up the obvious. You have access to high-level decision makers who are, you ready? Completely unguarded. I've been able to get appointments with an absolutely nutty amount, like crazy, insane amount of high-level decision makers. And I've also been referred by others who were high-level decision makers who've never, like, bought a damn thing from me. These are people I've established relationships with. So think about that right now. I mean, how many people do you cold call that say, oh, yeah, no thanks, but wait, let me refer you to, like, this person that could use what you're doing, right? Even when you ask for that, I'm guessing that, like, you know, you don't have, like, a pile of opportunity from that. But I've been able to do that on LinkedIn. I've even had many high-level decision makers, you ready for this? I want you to listen to this one, who've called me. They've approached me. Want to give you a few cases in point. I don't want to just go and rattle off some BS numbers here that you can say, ah, he's making it up to make his point. I'm not. My W-2 doesn't lie. But case in point, just last month I had three presidents, I would say medium-sized companies, they had approached me to do business. They wanted to buy my training services. I didn't approach them. They were relationships that I was nurturing, keeping in touch, doing everything that I should be doing on LinkedIn. They approached me. Two out of three of them have become my client already. They just approached me last month. Now, that's kind of another point I want to make, that you will find that when you develop these strong relationships on LinkedIn, that the sales cycle is much, much shorter, because they have developed this, like, trust in you, right? Or you've really developed it. You're the one who should get the credit for that, right? And they trust you. They know you. They like you. And, you know, it wouldn't be a podcast if I didn't beat up my favorite, like, new vocabulary word. It's not even new anymore for me. It's like 4 years old at this point. And my favorite word is propinquity. Propinquity means nearness and closeness and kinship. And that's what you're establishing when you're nurturing your LinkedIn network. So the one that did not buy from me right away is going to be starting up with me in January. That's, I mean, I don't know, maybe they just didn't want to hurt my feelings, but I know for a fact that there's some budgets that are going to be coming into play in January. Plus, I know that they're just now starting the hiring process. Some of them are not on board yet, that kind of thing. So January is when we're going to start out. But even if this guy's just being really nice to me, didn't want to tell me to, like, to go and, like, kiss his ass or something, like Meatloaf would say, two out of three ain't bad, right? I mean, I'll take it, considering, like, I didn't have to go after them. I mean, you know, kind of a low cost of doing business there, gang, right? So the thing that I want you to remember there is that, seriously, there are no gatekeepers. So the only other thing that I feel it necessary to say, and I don't want you to be insulted by this because it's going to be rather blunt, I think many of you make things more difficult than they need to be. And that's not entirely your fault. I do think that you're a little bit to blame. And again, I don't want to sit here like the all-knowing Uncle Paul, like I got it all figured out. I don't. Many times you'll hear me talking about these things. I'll say us and we and stuff. Not because that's what you're supposed to say as a trainer, like use that like inclusive type of language just to kind of bond with people, but because I've been there and I've nobody on this podcast is going to out-dumb me for dumb mistakes. I've done some just like epically dumb things in my career. So it's just kind of the way it is. But I'm going to tell you that many of you are making it more difficult than you need to be making it. And for you to continue to just put all artillery fire on cold calling and deal with gatekeepers, when you can continue to do some of the cold calling, put some of the artillery fire there, but take some of that time and effort and put it over onto LinkedIn, you're going to find that the combination of that is going to be more of a winning combination for you. And you're also going to find that you're going to have opportunities now that you didn't before, because again, you're going to reach people who that's where they want to be reached. That's where they like to hang out. And by the way, I'm one of them. I mean, I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn. I enjoy being there, whatever it is. So the people that I have bought from at Castain Training Systems typically tend to be the ones that I have formed relationships with there. Because also, I want to make sure I take good care of my network. It's give and take, right? I don't want to just always be buy from me and this is what I'm doing and it's all about me. No, I mean, if I trust you and you sell something that either I could use or someone in my network or my audience could use or whatever it is, I'm going to be your advocate because that's just the way I'm wired. But I'm not alone in that. So that's kind of reason number one. Again, I feel it's a mic drop reason that the fact that we don't have to deal with gatekeepers, it should be end of podcast. End of, as my dad would say when we were like arguing when I was a kid, end of discussion, right? And if you pursued it with him after end of discussion, man, it was bad. Anyway, so let's go to reason number two. Compelling reason number two. And I want you to really pay attention to this one. And this one's going to be personal in a moment because I'm going to share my personal journey with this one. LinkedIn and your ability to build a network is your insurance policy for a future where everything changes. Do you guys agree that everything changes? I mean, some of you listening to this right now, are you in a place, in a career, and it could even be a predicament, God forbid, that like you kind of look back and just say, and a year ago, who would have thought, right? Or 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, you might have said, who would have thunk it, right? And I intentionally said thunk it because I just wanted to, I don't know. Who knows why the hell I said it? But things change. So it's your insurance policy for a future where everything changes. I mean, you might find yourself, and I'm sorry, like I'm going to be kind of grim right now, and like we could all get a drink at the bar after this, but like I got to lay out reality to you. But you might find yourself out of work. You might find yourself in an industry that's hurting, or maybe an industry that, well, I'm done with that, right? I mean, you know, I have a lot of people, not to beat up the printing industry. I love the printing industry. I came from the printing industry. Job I had before I launched Castain Training Systems, I was a vice president at $1 billion a year printer that owned 70 other printing companies. So I'm not here to diss the printing industry. But the printing industry has been getting its ass kicked for a long time. And there are a lot of people that basically they're like, they're tapping out. They're like, and I'm done. And in some ways, they've got to start over and they've got to leave. Or it could be something where it's not like hurting the industry, but you just, your heart isn't in it anymore. Have any of you listening to like listening right now had that in your life where it's like you kind of thought that you were going to do something and it made sense, or you're selling a particular type of product, certain type of industry, certain type of buyers or whatever, and then you find yourself kind of falling out of love with it. I certainly went through that, by the way. That's why I left that company, not left the industry, but I left that country. I had to go on the lam and change my name. Anyway, I'm sorry. Just silly today. It's my pre-medication nuttiness. But, I mean, have you ever found yourself, you know, just like kind of in that situation where you kind of fall out of love with it? And I was starting to say before I got silly that I've certainly been in that type of scenario. But also, too, you might find yourself needing more sales, maybe to make President's Club or a bonus. Or maybe, I mean, God forbid, I mean, like, do I have to, like, spell this one out for you? Because, like, nobody ever wants to talk about this. I'm going to talk about this. I mean, are there times when we need more money? Because, I mean, you know, I do pretty damn good, thanks to you guys, with Castain Training Systems. But I'm also going to tell you, I got three kids in college. So, like, there's never a point in time I can, like, at least for the next, probably about the next 5 or 6 years of my life, probably about the next 10 years while I'm paying off their college loans for them, where I'm not going to say, nah, I make enough money. Nah, nobody buy more from me this year, please. Guys, like, I love you, but you got to stop buying from me. It's just, it's too much sales. It's too much money. Too much hassle. I mean, who the hell wants more money? Guys, you got to stop doing this to me. Stop buying from me. I mean, seriously, there's going to be a time when you need more money. There also could be a point in your life where you might decide that you want to launch a business. Now, this is where I want to talk a little bit about my journey and my story. And I've done this before, so I'm going to give you kind of just an abbreviated version of this. But when I first went on LinkedIn, it was 2008. And I quit LinkedIn for a short period of time back then. And the reason why, and it's probably the reason why many of you quit, is because I didn't understand what all the fuss was about. I actually thought, you know, while I was quitting, that LinkedIn kind of sucked. I wasn't like, where was the business that I was supposed to get in doing this? Where was the exposure and everything else? So I quit. And then a few months later, when I decided to return to it, my reason for returning to it was that I came to the realization that LinkedIn didn't suck. It was me. I did not do a damn thing. So, of course, LinkedIn sucked. And at that point in time, I wanted to build a brand because the company I was working for, I had really created that rock star status. Everybody knew who I was. There was a waiting list to go into my training program. I mean, at any given time, we had over 100 people who were waiting to get into the training program. And I even started doing them more often, adding more programs. I was doing this all single-handedly, with half my brain tied behind my back, by the way. And it was not. But I wanted to build a brand outside of the company I was working for so that someday I could write a book. It was something I always wanted to do. And so I got back at it with the idea that someday I would write a book. Now, it's funny because that was my motivation, not to start a business, not to really make any degree, you know, of money from it or whatever it is, but my theory was that the company I was working for, it was till death do us part. I wanted to get a book, like, you know, like with my name on it. I wanted, you know, to say, you know, written by Uncle Paul, right? Or the artist known, formerly known as Uncle Paul, or, you know, UP or whatever it is, something trendy. I wanted that. And so that's what I did. Now, I had a left hook that was thrown at me. Now, before I tell you what it is, I decided that I was going to work at my relationships. So I created a communication plan. I'm not going to go through all the details because I've been kind of giving away the playbook. And that's what I'm going to be doing. I'm actually going to be giving away the playbook in the webinar that I have coming up. But I'm not going to give it away for free on my podcast. Just not going to do it. But I started, you know, just nurturing these relationships, never once selling at that point in time, never once asking for anything. I was giving to them and even like introducing people and being a matchmaker and referring people, all this kind of stuff, putting out content. And about 2.5 years in to me doing this, Mrs. Uncle Paul, Laura, the artist formerly known as Laura, my high school sweetheart, was diagnosed with breast cancer. And as I always say, we were very fortunate, and we caught it at the earliest possible stage. And we were able, I mean, it was so early, we caught it, you know, they have different stages of breast cancer. We caught it at stage 0. We were lucky, because if we waited, it wouldn't have been a stage zero anymore. And we caught it, and we were able to do an outpatient surgery. Instead of chemotherapy, she was able to have radiation, 6 weeks of it. And in no time at all, we put it behind us. But, you know, sometimes you have a trauma in your life, and when you have a loved one, someone who's, you know, been your best friend forever. I mean, we met as kids, by the way. I've known Mrs. Uncle Paul as long as I've been selling, 33 years. And we've been together that whole time. I asked her out in 1983, and we married in 1988. And it was, you know, I'm not going to lie, psychologically, it was like somebody came up and kneed me in the balls. It really, it's just no other way. I'm not going to be eloquent about it. I'm just going to tell you what it felt like. But it made me think about my life and our life as a family. And I realized that life is unpredictable and it's way too short. I've seen it so many times. I know you guys have too. And I know this is not the first time you've ever heard that. But sometimes we just need to experience it firsthand, unfortunately, before we say, okay, I need to do something with that knowledge. And I hit my aha moment. And my aha moment was that I had really fallen out of love with who I was doing my work for. No disrespect to them. They're a great company. I met many great people there. But I wanted to do it on my own. And I wanted to start my business. So this wasn't going to be something that I would make the decision and then I'd spend the next 1 or 2 or 3 years trying to figure out how to do it. I looked at my financial situation and I said, I've got 3 bank accounts that I'm willing to use to finance and carry me for the next year or two. Because you always hear you need about a good 2, 2.5 years to do, you know, to get your business up and running and everything. And, you know, I launched the business and I never looked back. But I had something that most people didn't have. I had an army of people that I had built long before I needed them. And I called upon them. I didn't call upon them in a way where I said, you owe me. Here's the scorecard. Uncle Paul 3, you 0. I didn't do that. Didn't even cross my mind. What I did do is because I had strong relationships with the vast majority of my network, and you have to realize that not only had I been nurturing this network for 2.5 years, when I say nurturing, I don't mean just like, you know, like liking stuff and commenting on stuff. Like to me that, like, you know, I guess you could call that nurturing it, but to me that's about, you know, like is about minimal effort as you can do. And everybody does that stuff. You're not going to stand out that way. I had actually been doing my best to help them. If somebody needed to pick my brain, I gladly got on the phone for free with somebody back then because I wasn't a business. And I would give them a free coaching call. There were other people, like not even other people, there was a huge majority of people that I had actually spoken with in my network because back then I was a lunatic with this. I was speaking with some weeks 10 to 15 people from my LinkedIn network because I felt that is the warmest cold call you could ever have. We would set it up in advance so I wouldn't just like call them out of the blue. Oh, hi, it's me, that random person you don't know. No, I would get on a phone call with them that they would approve and say, yeah, let's talk Thursday at 3:15 or whatever. And I got to know them. I didn't get them on the phone and pitch them or whatever it is. So 2.5 years of that, being valuable and being, you know, like that whole be a resource, which is kind of an overused thing, but I actually was a resource to a lot of people. Many of you know that. You're in my network and you knew me back then. But when I launched my business, I simply sent out few notifications saying, hey, forgive me if this is spammy. You know me, I'm all about giving, but now I need to ask for something. I'm going to be a little selfish now. I've launched Castain Training Systems. Here are the areas. Forgive me, I'm coughing here like you wouldn't believe I'm battling a cold, so I kind of muted the microphone so you didn't have to hear me coughing in your ear. But I said, here are the areas, the 4 areas that I could possibly help you. If you can't use my products or services, you know, perhaps you might know of someone else who could. Well, The result of that, inside of 30 days, the first 30 days of Castate Training Systems, way back when, in I'm guessing this was April 2011, maybe it was March, I think it was April. The first 30 days, I landed 45 new clients, which is substantial. And I'm not saying, like, I'm not calling somebody a client who's buying like a $12 thing from me, like I have a $12 product. I'm talking about 15 of them. I'm sorry, no. 30 of the 45 were coaching clients, and I don't charge $12 for that. These were coaching clients, and I landed an immediate 15 corporate clients where I was doing a substantial amount of work, rewriting their training programs, writing training manuals, being the keynote speaker at their sales kickoff meeting and things like that. So if you really think about it, the cost of business there for me was nothing. It was a little sweat. But here's the thing I learned back then. Most people, when it comes to getting results, would rather write a check than put in the sweat equity. And what do I mean by that? What I mean is that most people are not willing to be as patient as I was and work at their network for any amount of time. I don't think, by the way, that you should have to wait 2.5 years like I did before you pull the trigger and start to ask for things from your network. I think that's too long. Way too long. But I'm here to tell you that the average person, if they don't get instant gratification, they go off and they quit LinkedIn. And that's why you might be in the situation where you are right now. It just didn't happen as quickly enough for you. But, you know, the thing of it is that I had no idea that I was going to be launching my business. And thank God I really thought about this. And I said, I need to have a network. I understood it. I wanted the network so that people would eventually run out and buy my book. And by the way, I haven't abandoned the idea of the book. I'd still like to write one day. It's not, I'm not scared of doing it. And I took a long time thinking about that one, by the way. Like, why am I avoiding this? And my heart isn't in it. And call me a whore, call me somebody who likes money, but with 3 kids in college and just at a time in my life where I want to make sure that I've put a good amount of money aside and everything else, and finally embracing my dream of owning a business after years of putting it off. I put it off, just so you know. Really, I would say 20, wow. Yeah, it was a long time. It was about 20 years, I guess. Almost 20 years, 18 years or something like that, I put it off. So my theory was, and still is, I want to build a solid business. I don't want to go running around preaching to you guys about all these sale things based on, like, you know, stuff I did, like, in the past and everything. I want to be able to talk about stuff that, like, I'm doing. How did I build my business? How have I been able to double and triple my own revenue year after year in a highly competitive industry where the average person doesn't think they even need sales training, by the way? How have I been able to do so well with it? So not that I'm going to write about like that per se in the book, but I just think you have a lot more credibility when you're actually doing this shit rather than talking about a bunch of philosophical stuff of like that happened back in the day. So anything I'll be writing about is stuff that really like I'm doing right now and that, you know, based on taking a business with nothing and scaling it into, you know, something that is quite substantial. So, you know, the other thing that that I was able to do as a result of taking out this insurance policy with LinkedIn is that it helped me to develop an email list. At that time, back in 2011, because of my LinkedIn efforts, I was able to develop a mailing list back then of 10,000 who have opted in. This isn't me spamming 10,000 people. These are people who said, yes, I want to be on your email list. They had opted in. So when you think about permission-based marketing, that's what happened here. I had the permission to go ahead and email someone. So back then, I had 10,000 opt-ins. I've now grown it to well over, I think it's about 35,000 or something like that right now. And I can tell you that 40% of my email list came from LinkedIn, whether it be from my network or my involvement on LinkedIn, whether like things, you know, like when you publish articles on LinkedIn or you share them in groups that allow you to share them. As a result of that, it's brought me a lot of web traffic, which is all great and everything, but that like that's got to convert into something. And mine has, yes, converted into sales, but it's also converted into people who want to be on a list where they continually keep up to date on what I'm up to. Now, you know, I don't want to go off on a whole tangent about email lists, but I heard something that really hit home with me, and it was by a gentleman by the name of Jeff Walker who said this. And when he talks about email lists, I think actually, you know what? I'm saying it's Jeff Walker. It was either Jeff Walker or Dan Kennedy. It was one of those two that said it. It might have been both of them. But I believe it was Jeff Walker who said this, that your email list, right, of opt-ins, remember, not the people you're spamming, that, you know, just like names you've gathered and email addresses that you've like, you know, like mined off the internet or whatever it is. I'm talking about people who say, yes, I want to receive your newsletter or whatever. That email list, according to Jeff Walker, every time you email them, that is the closest that you'll ever be able to legally print money in a way. It's like legally printing money. And I agree with that. I mean, especially now that I've grown it to 30,000, even when I was at 10,000, not being arrogant or stuck up or conceited, I'm just stating a fact here. Back then especially, not especially, back then even at 10,000, I could click send and send something out. And within hours of that email, back then I was selling just the coaching services, but I could tell you that, you know, I could send out an email blast and have 20 or 25 people wanting to talk to me about my coaching services, and I could convert probably about 75 to 80% of them without any kind of hardcore sales pitch. And now I send out an email blast, and it's not uncommon for me to get 150 people who are signing up to one of the webinars that I'm doing. So I'm just telling you, it's huge. But, you know, back then, I mean, I was even late to the party with that. I just wasn't like really developing the list like I should have been. I waited numerous years. I mean, I've been doing this since 2008. I didn't start really getting serious about building a list until probably 2010, maybe a year and a half before I launched my company. But I mean, when I grew it to 10,000, I was like, wow, what would really happen if I get like a little bit better at this and everything? And even along the way, I haven't been as serious as I really should have been with it. I mean, I think I could probably have been up to 40 or 50 or 60,000 by now. But, you know, hindsight, right? But here's the thing I want to point out. This is really important. By the time most people find value in building their LinkedIn network, I don't want to be the pessimist and tell you it's too late, but it's kind of too late. Whenever you're embracing something under the gun, you're going to project that to people. And what's going to happen is you're going to come across as salesy and aggressive and desperate. But here's the thing that, like, if you're like not driving in the car, I want you to underline this because somebody needs to tell this to you. Here's another little brutal honesty moment with your Uncle Paul. I really think it comes across as very shallow, especially if you've been connected with somebody for a while and they've been reaching out to you and you're not even giving them the courtesy of a response. But all of a sudden now your world has been like turned upside down. And all of a sudden, now you need them, so now I'll respond to you. Or all of a sudden, you come out of the blue where you've had no interaction with them, and boom, you want a favor. And I'm telling you, not from a point or a place of bitterness, but from a place of someone who has seen it firsthand. And I've spoken to many people who have also built quite a following like I have, that have experienced this. And, you know, I'm very flattered that I'm in a position that people would think to come to me. But, you know, what happens when you haven't built a network and all of a sudden you're hitting somebody up? You're going to have some people. I'm not one of them, so you don't have to worry about that with me. I'm not going to sit there and go, how dare they? They didn't answer my emails in 5 years or whatever it is. I'm going to be too busy saying, who the hell is this person? And I really think the average person that you hit up for a favor and like you've had no contact with them, they go, who are you? And like, why are you in my face out of like coming out of like nowhere hitting me up for a favor or a meeting or for money? It's like, it's crazy. So, You know, I think that's what's going to happen. You're going to just it's really too late at that point. So you're going to but you're going to come across as really shallow. It's like, oh, so now when you need something, you give a shit about me. Right? So now, and it's just the weirdest thing to observe. I mean, I see it all the time. So I think you should be mindful of that. So if we really want to just break down today's podcast, and if you want my two best reasons why you should be on LinkedIn, I could give you a lot of them. But if you want to just bottom line it for you, there's no gatekeeper. And also, it's an insurance policy that, you know, you might have to use, whether it be now, the near future, or somewhere off in the distant future. So where I want to leave this with you is this. You know, there's apps. You remember in the beginning when I was talking to you that there's like some misunderstandings and why people don't embrace LinkedIn. And one of them is, I said, many of you feel that we're saying, give up everything else and just, you know, just do LinkedIn, right? Don't do any of the traditional things. You know, I was going through some of those reasons. Well, there's really another one in here, right? And remember the other reason I gave you is people don't have the time. But the other reason why a lot of people don't embrace LinkedIn, you might be completely sold right now, but you might be scratching your head and say, okay, great, Castan, you got me all pumped up, ready to go, but I don't know what to do here. Help me out. Like, what's the plan? You know, all right, sold, dude. You know, I'm on board, but what do I do? Because, you know, I was on board at one point, and I just, like nothing happened for me on LinkedIn. I want you guys to know that on October 20th at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time, I'm going to be hosting a webinar. And the webinar is called How to Generate More Leads via LinkedIn. Now, before I go on, you might have heard the date. You might have heard the time and said, oh, great. You finally got me sold here, Castain. But, like, you know, like I got a thing that day. I'm going to encourage you to sign up anyway. And anytime you hear of me doing a course or doing a webinar, if you can't make it, sign up anyway. Not so that you could just give me your money and not get anything for it, because you need to know that I always record my sessions. And when I say record it, I want you guys to think about like an event on TV, like a pay-per-view. When you're watching that, it's like you're there, like it's happening right now. And that's how it is with my programs. I mean, the only thing you're not going to be able to do if you listen to a recorded version is ask me a question live. So what I always do with everyone is I let them know. You'll hear me say it in the webinar, that for those of you who are attending kind of after the fact and watching this recording, if you have any questions, and I give my email address so that you can email me your webinar-related questions, and I don't turn my back on my clients, so you know, I'd be happy to help you out. But anyway, I want to go through really what you're going to learn. But really, if you want me to just kind of bottom line it, I show you in that webinar what to do from the moment people connect with you to the moment they become your client. So if you want some more specifics, we're going to talk about, again, what to say and do from the moment you connect with someone. But I'm going to go a step further. I'm going to actually give you the templates that I've been using. So you're going to have like a nice little plug-and-play system. And when I say templates, I send Word docs out. And the reason why I send that out instead of a PDF, I want you to doctor up the document. I want you to make it yours. I'm not a big fan of using scripts. I think that they're great for actors. You and I are not actors. And I think that if I send it as a Word doc, you can just like change it to fit your style and your personality. We're also going to talk about how to position yourself as an expert and the absolute best choice. Build that trust. Build that propinquity that we've been talking about. We're going to talk about how to provide value. And this is really important. Again, if you're not driving, I want you to really think about this, because this is really a dangerous thing that happens. It certainly happened to me. You want to be able to provide value without conditioning a bunch of freeloaders. Because, see, every guru out there said, you give, you give, you give. And I disagree with that. I think you should give, but I think that you need to find a tactful way of letting people know that you're not a foundation, that you're not a not-for-profit, unless you are a foundation or a not-for-profit. But I'm telling you, you have to be able to condition people to see you as a person that is not really for the friend zone, that this is a person that, like, maybe I could buy from or, like, you know, refer or whatever. We're going to talk about how to create a referral machine, even if or even with people that you're not already doing business with. And when I explain it, it'll make perfect sense. But many of you, you're limiting your referrals from people who have actually bought from you. And that's a huge mistake. There's a whole other world available to you with your LinkedIn contacts. You just need to know how to set that up properly. Again, not coming out of nowhere and saying, hi, we've not communicated. Could you refer me? See, that's the wrong way to do it. I'm going to show you the right way to do it. We're also going to talk about how you could use LinkedIn groups and LinkedIn Publisher to create more opportunities. We're going to talk about how to send emails without paying LinkedIn for the emails, because, you know, or being a premium member. We're going to talk about how to dramatically increase your response rates by using LinkedIn. We're going to talk about how to approach someone without it like coming across as salesy, right? Because that's always the awkward moment. It's like many of you ask me, like, how do I transition this from, okay, we've communicated a bit, we've had some interaction, and now I want to talk to you about doing some business. I've got you covered there. The one thing that I'm not going to do, and you can't pay me enough money to do it, I'm not kidding you, like, even if you say, well, I'll tell you what, Castain, this is a $99 webinar, I'll give you $500 if you do it. Sorry, I won't do it for $1,000. I won't do it for $5,000. One thing I'm not going to talk about is like how you should be doing things with your LinkedIn profile. Why? Because I think there is just a stupid amount of people that are preaching that whole thing. And I think you don't need to pay me to regurgitate what everybody else is saying. Plus, I think, and I don't even think, I know it firsthand, that we are really making this whole business about having a perfect profile the most important thing. Now, you can't go around with a shitty profile. But I'm here to tell you that it's more important that you learn to be social on a social network than dicking around with a profile all day. In fact, I mean, it's just amazing how many people I come across. They'll say, I'm talking to them. They're like, oh, yeah, you know, I heard your podcast recently, and you were talking about LinkedIn. Yeah, I'm going to get more serious with LinkedIn. You know, in fact, I have all these ideas I'm going to do with my profile. Great. What are you going to do after that? And there is dead silence. So, you know, we don't need more content on talking about creating profiles and talking about all the little tools on LinkedIn. What you need is you need a battle plan. You need a communication plan, and you need it from somebody who's done it and who didn't just start doing it a few minutes ago because he needs to go and just like make money overnight. I've been doing this since 2008. So in doing it since 2008, you're going to be hanging out with somebody who's been able to make every conceivable mistake, do quite a few things right, and show you both so you could avoid the mistakes and expedite your results. So if this sounds like something that's of interest to you, I'd like you to at least, even if it's not of interest to you, just humor me. Go check out what I have to say about this. I talk a little bit more about my story and social networking there and kind of a little bit more about my left hook and how I did things. If you visit yoursalesplaybook.com/more leads, yoursalesplaybook.com/more leads. You can learn all about it. I hope you'll join us. I hope that you'll sign up soon, because just like coming up this week, October the 20th, we're going to be doing this. Now, listen to me, please. You damn it, you listen to me. I feel like I'm barking orders and like reprimanding you for like catching you smoking behind the shed or something, right? What I want to say is that if you happen to listen to this, and it's after October 20th. And many of you, I mean, people tell me, I just listened to your podcast on whatever. And I'm like, damn it, that was like 2012 I did that. If you find yourself in that situation, you could still go to that link and you could go instantly into the recording and you could check it out. So don't let the fact that the webinar has passed keep you from being able to leverage a really, really powerful business tool. So with that, folks, my name is Paul Castain. I'm from YourSalesPlaybook.com, and I want to wish you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production.